KBTC, a viewer-supported community service of Bates Technical College.
From KBTC Public Television Studios in Tacoma, Washington, it's the Northwest Now podcast. Each week, we take a closer look at the people and issues that affect all of us here in Western Washington. So sit back, relax, and join the conversation with your host, Tom Lason.
There's a reason they call Seattle the Jet City, and that reason is Boeing, builder of the bombers that won World War II and the Cold War, and the first American commercial jet, and employer to hundreds of thousands of people, providing for families, educations, and a vibrant community. But Boeing is in deep trouble and has been for a while. Yes, the company is probably too big to fail and there will be a turnaround. But at what cost? In lives, confidence, and market share? Tonight, two of the top analysts watching Boeing, Scott Hamilton with Liam.net and Foundation for Aviation Safety Executive Director Ed Pearson, and our Steve Kiggins with more on the story of this region's most important corporate citizen. Boeing is the discussion tonight on Northwest Now. Nobody who grew up around here, including me, would take any pleasure in doing this show. But Boeing is in so much trouble, we'd be remiss not to do it. A report issued last month by a panel of experts sharply criticizes Boeing's safety culture. The Justice Department is investigating, and the FAA has given Boeing 90 days to come up with a company-wide plan to fix its safety and defect problems. This follows the 737 MAX program chief getting blown out in February, but the recent blowout of a window plug on a 737 MAX 9 was the very last straw, and a very lucky break in that nobody died. For more on this story, Northwest Now's Steve Kiggins.
There's now intensified regulatory scrutiny across production and quality control across the entire 737 MAX program, and Boeing insists it's encouraging its employees to step forward with concerns without fear for retaliation. But tonight, we speak with a former employee who believes the culture of the company cannot change if executive leadership remains.
You know, growing up, all of them talk about, oh, Boeing's one of the better companies.
Devin Fisher says he followed a long line of family members who helped build America's aviation industry at the Boeing Company. He was hired back in 2011 at the Renton factory, installing interiors on the 737. When he identified a procedure that could damage materials, Fisher spoke up to management.
They wanted the plane out the door to go to paint. In transport, seats move, so if there's not one in the beginning, one at the end bolted down, they'll scratch the C-rail, which at that point is considered structure. It doesn't affect flyability, but I'd also have to redo my job again.
Fisher says his repeated warnings earned him reassignment to another crew and his eventual firing in 2019.
Betrayed? Maybe? Kind of like lied to, obviously.
Fast forward to January 2024. Alaska Airlines Flight 1282 suffered decompression when a cabin door plug ripped away from the fuselage at around 16,000 feet shortly after takeoff. A preliminary NTSB report reveals four bolts that secure the door plug were missing. A March Senate committee hearing with the head of the NTSB shed light on the agency's investigation and the culture at Boeing.
The expert review panel found that Boeing employees are still afraid to speak up. There is a way for employees to speak directly to the FAA. Is there a way for people to speak directly to NTSB to aid in this investigation?
Yes, in fact, I received a whistleblower report myself.
During a fourth quarter 2023 earnings call to shareholders, Boeing CEO David Calhoun insisted employees should speak out.
Use your voice. Speak up. Focus on every next detail. We will seek out and act on your feedback.
It's that confidence from above that Fisher hopes prevails when Boeing's troubles pass.
You need to get all new managers. You need to take a whole new approach to it.
Now, Boeing has not been able to locate those records detailing Fisher's allegations, but the company says it takes them seriously and doesn't tolerate retaliation. Now, in regards to the Alaskan Airlines incident, the United States Department of Justice has since opened a criminal probe into Boeing to determine whether or not the company may have violated a deferred prosecution agreement in connection to two fatal 737 MAX crashes that killed 346. In Renton, Steve Kiggins, Northwest Now.
Longtime observers have said for years that Boeing's merger acquisition, McDonnell Douglas, corrupted Boeing's culture, a culture that used to be focused on engineering and safety that became dominated by financiers who thought that they could outsource everything and just squeeze suppliers to increase profits. But it didn't work. Almost every project Boeing touches has quality control, cost, and delivery problems. As a result, Boeing has lost money, market share, and trust. Can Boeing be salvaged? Joining us now is a returning guest, Managing Director of Liam.net and longtime aviation analyst Scott Hamilton. I want to make sure that I mention this, that you're the author of Air Wars, the Global Combat Between Airbus and Boeing, which looks like a great book. And I think it's a great place to start. You know, United CEO Scott Kirby recently said that he's kind of putting a pause on, I wouldn't say giving up on, but putting a pause on the MAX for a while, opting for A321s. He says quality has been a two-decade issue. That's a quote for him. Boeing, though, still has a big backlog. So do you think this is the beginning of the end for Boeing, or are they just too big to fail?
Well, I don't think it's the beginning of the end for Boeing. And is it too big to fail? I guess that depends on how you define failing. Could it go out of business? No, I don't think that would happen because of the important defense work that it does. The industry certainly wants a duopoly at the very least, if not a third competitor. Could Boeing wind up in bankruptcy? I think that would be a pretty good stretch, but I'm not prepared to rule that out.
So you see them carrying on as a manufacturer because of the necessity, because of the demand, but possibly reduced? Is that a fair characterization?
Well, you know, Boeing has 50-some-odd billion dollars in debt, 25 of which they took on during the grounding of the MAX, a 21-month grounding, and then the two-year pandemic. They have to pay that back. I don't remember right off the top of my head what the payback schedule is, but they've got billions due in the next 3 years. They're just continuing to lose money in defense. They're losing money in commercial. Boeing Global Services is making money, but it's not enough to carry the company, really. The cash flow was hurt. Now you've got the FAA is going to have their thumbs on them for an indefinite period. You know, what kind of impact is that going to be? They just entered labor negotiations with the IAM 751 Touch Labor Union on March the 8th. And they're looking for a 40% wage hike over a four-year contract. Boeing has got a lot of problems. And the question really is, can they maintain their financial stability for an indefinite period of time? Or would they decide that they needed to restructure their debt? And I just don't have an answer for that.
You think a government bailout is something that's outside the realm of possibility if things go sideways enough?
Boy, I don't know. Boeing has very few friends in Congress anymore. But I certainly think that the members of Congress recognize the importance to defense, the importance to the commercial side. Boeing is still the biggest exporter for the United States, I believe. The job loss of Boeing, if it were to fail, the impact of the economy, the impact of the supply chain, it would be huge. Now, I would kind of equate this back to, I think it was 1972 when Lockheed was engaged in the defense C-5A program. It was engaged in the commercial L-1011 program. And Rolls-Royce went bankrupt, which was supplying the engine to the L-1011. The C-5A went way, way over budget. And because of the Rolls-Royce issue, so did the L-1011. And Lockheed was on the verge of failure, and there was a government loan guarantee that very controversially did make its way through Congress. But would that happen again with the politics of Washington between the Republicans and Democrats that there are today? I have no idea what the outcome would be.
So the expert panel did their review. They found a bunch of non-conforming issues with Boeing's manufacturing processes and the safety culture. FAA put Boeing on this 90-day double secret probation, to quote an old movie. Is that feasible, 90 days to fix this? Can a broken culture
change in 90 days? And on top of that, I'm going to put another layer on that cake, which is, does Dave Calhoun survive this?
Well, 90 days is when they're supposed to come up with a plan to fix the culture. So 90 days in terms of fixing is off the table. The question is, you've got 30 years, basically since 1997, of the development of the culture that we have today. I hope it wouldn't take 30 years to fix it, but it certainly would take more than 90 days after an approved plan is presented or adopted by the FAA and by Boeing. It would take years to change the culture. And what's interesting is that a few weeks ago, we at Lehem News had said a major step to fixing the culture is to come up with a good contract with its labor union, IAM 751. And then yesterday, March 17th, the Seattle Times came out with a big, almost a full-page editorial on that very same topic, which, oh, by the way, they cited our earlier work.
Yeah, it seems to me, I have a sneaking suspicion you could change the company culture in the design and engineering areas, on the factory floor, out on the ramp, in about half an hour. You know, if I were magically wanted to be the CEO. From that point above, though, the folks who are deciding, you know, who are so in love with lean processes, so in love with outsourcing everything, so in love with a lot of the things that we've seen be problematic, that culture, do you think that culture from a certain level above is capable of change?
Well, that's where you get to the question of whether Dave Calhoun survives. And you know, he's been on the board of directors since 2009. He became president and CEO in January of 2020 in the wake of the 2018-19 MAX crisis. They fired the previous CEO, David Muhlenberg. And Calhoun announced a whole bunch of changes for improving the safety culture. Yet here we are today. So will he survive? I haven't heard that the board is ready to make a change, but then the question is, who do you give the job to? That's a real question, because surprisingly, Boeing has a very thin bench internally to move up the chain. And even if they had a strong candidate within, I'm sorry, he's part of the culture. So I almost think you need to bring somebody in from the outside who is not part of the culture. Now, the question, who would that be? I don't know. So I think Calhoun will survive for the near term because there's nobody there to replace him.
Yeah, yeah. Talked a little bit about the management there. Otherwise, what do you think the path to recovery is here? Will we ever be able to see both high production and safety first? Can those two go together? High production and good and a good price on an airplane and safety first. What is the solution there? Is that possible to do with Boeing?
Well, it is. And yes, what was defined as high production back in 1996 is very different than what high production is defined as today. But Boeing was an engineering firm and up until the McDonnell Douglas merger at the end of 1997. So yes, you can absolutely have safety and high production peacefully coexisting. Where the problem is and has been is that the what I like to call the gentrification of Boeing, and that is the addition of all these people from GE Corp who came from the Jack Welch culture. The gentrification of Boeing has shifted from an engineering company to one that is there to appease shareholders, and many would argue to feather the nest of all the executives at the expense of everybody else, and you know, the line employees, for example. And until you are willing to tell Wall Street, we are not going to return 100% of our free cash flow to you for shareholder value, you know, 50% for research and development, 50% for shareholders, to me, makes a lot of sense. You balance that, but you got to get rid of the gentrification of Boeing.
Yeah, you mentioned, a piece of that. When you take a look at the supply chain, not only has there been an aggressive move when it comes to employees and people in-house, but also suppliers as well. Boeing, well known for trying to wring costs out of the parts that are made. We're just looking at final assembly here lately. We're not even looking at parts manufacturing. I know this is short, 30 seconds though. I mean, how do we ever even know that the parts are being, the oversight on those to get to final assembly is sufficient?
Well, that is, in fairness to Boeing, a real good question, because the parts go all the way down to the people who make the fasteners. I mean, right there in Tacoma, you have Tool Gauge, which is a really good company. But even before the MAX grounding, they were having trouble finding people because it's a very tedious job and they were shifting to robotics. But how does Boeing assure that somebody like Tool Gauge, who makes fasteners, is in fact doing what they're supposed to do? And I don't really have a good answer for that.
Yeah, I think it's a continuing question. Scott Hamilton, thanks so much for coming to Northwest Now.
You're welcome.
Joining us now is the Executive Director of the Foundation for Aviation Safety, Ed Pearson. Ed, thanks so much for coming to Northwest Now. I want to start with kind of just a 30,000-foot view of this. You have so much experience in terms of assembly and production in the Seattle area with Boeing. Is the consuming public, the average guy, overreacting to this? Is this catastrophic for Boeing? Is it going to all be okay in the end? How bad is all this?
Well, thanks for having me, Tom. As far as how bad this is, it is pretty bad. I mean, we're seeing issues with airplanes that we shouldn't be seeing, and we shouldn't accept these as normal. That's something that I think a lot of reporters, you know, have. There's kind of a, you know, hey, anything associated with Boeing is, you know, horrible. But the truth of the matter is, you know, every day there's airplane flight operations, you know, but the reality is, we have serious issues. There are serious problems. So you can't stick your head in the sand and say we don't have these issues. I mean, the 737 MAX has got a lot of problems, and not to mention the fact that it killed 346 people, actually 347, because there was a rescue diver that also perished. So in any case, yeah, I think this is pretty bad in terms of, you know, admitting that these problems exist. I don't think we're admitting them. And that's what makes it worse.
And I was going to say, too, you know, a lot of the attention for a panel that falls off or a tire that falls off, some of those, you know, kind of fall into the maintenance wear. Things happen every day in the American aviation system when it comes to stuff. But fundamental mission critical parts assembly, the integrity of the airframe, some of those things are what we're talking about. You mentioned 737, but I think it's important to mention too, this spans a lot of different aircraft types, not only on the commercial side, but on the defense side as well. I mean, this is bigger than I think a lot of people see it for being right now. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. This is way bigger than even we're covering right now in the news, which is pretty high bar right now. I think again that you have to kind of look at these things in a almost an airplane by airplane mode. You know, you have to look at these things and say, what's going on with the 737 MAX? What's going on with the 787? You know, what's going on with the military planes? The truth of the matter is, the Boeing company and the employees of Boeing know how to make airplanes. I mean, they absolutely know how to build high quality, long lasting, incredible products. I mean, that's a given. So it's not like the skills aren't available. The problem is the focus on producing, getting things out faster than higher quality. And it's as simple as that. I don't care anybody in any industry, even your industry in the news industry, you know, if you have a deadline and you're rushed, you know your quality is affected. And in some, many occupations, that doesn't mean that, you know, people's lives are at risk, but in the airline industry, it does. And so just like in the medical industry, just like in the public safety industry, you know, we have to take these incidents seriously. We just can't dismiss them. This is one of the things that's been very frustrating. Our foundation, we created a foundation just to kind of help alert people to these issues because they're unaware of them. We had a gentleman who lost his entire family, pretty much his whole family, on the Ethiopian crash. He lost his three kids, his wife, and his mother-in-law. And he told us that, you know, had he been informed, he never would have put his family on these planes.
So that's a good segue into this question about the MAX crashes. I'm going to look back for a second. Boeing got hit with a $2.5 billion fine for defrauding the government in those MAX crashes. It resulted in a consent decree with the FAA that said, okay, Boeing, you're going to go in, dive in and fix this. We're going to get things straightened out. You're going to start pushing rework, stop pushing rework down the line. You know, we're going to fix all this stuff. So did Boeing just ignore this? And how are they going to explain that away if the Justice Department gets serious about filing charges, possibly criminal charges? How do they explain that away? What happened to the consent decree? Have they burned all their rope, in other words?
You know, the truth is that the company has been misrepresenting the safety of these airplanes. We actually, our foundation sent a 7-page letter to the judge in Texas because you're referring to the deferred prosecution agreement. And, you know, a lot of broken promises were made. A lot of promises were made that we were going to refocus. We, meaning the company, was going to refocus on quality and safety. And, you know, every financial report that came out, every public statement that came out said that this was, you know, everything is great and we're doing this wonderful job and improving our stability of our manufacturing operations. But the proof is in the pudding. I mean, the accident with Alaska, the safety culture audit, the production quality audit clearly shows that the company is doing more talking than action, unfortunately. And it's again, I think what's really important that people need to understand is, you know, the FAA has a huge responsibility here. The airline has a huge responsibility. This isn't all on Boeing, right? The FAA has been basically out of the picture. DOT, out of the picture. We just had a meeting about 11 days ago with the head of the FAA and the DOT, and we listed 35 specific problems that we've identified as a small foundation that need to be fixed. And unless you admit these problems exist, you'll never fix them. And so that's what we're trying to fight.
So has Boeing been, has the FAA been captured? That's a term used when a lot of regulatory agencies end up kind of being subservient almost to the industries that they're supposed to oversee and regulate. What, did the FAA get captured? And with that in mind, how do we ever know that planes are safe? You have this delegation issue where Boeing's being asked to certify work, sign off on work for FAA. And if you can't trust either party, how do I ever get on an airplane again and say to myself, yeah, I'm going to land successfully?
So the FAA, in my opinion and the opinion of people we work with, absolutely, they were completely captured for many years. You would have thought that the losing 346 lives and a $20 billion loss to the company would result in a different outcome. And unfortunately, they're very reactive. You know, we didn't want to pull any punches when we met with the head of the FAA and the number two person at a DOT. We said that you've become lazy and complacent as an agency. And, you know, the fact that you have really no footprint in the busiest airplane factory in the world, you know, I think there's like 20 now that they put in, which they make sounds like a big deal, but in a facility that has thousands of employees working 7 days a week, it's really woefully inadequate. So the FAA's got to do a much better job there. And the delegation's authority, if I could just mention that, people understanding about the delegation authority in engineering, what people don't understand is they also have that in manufacturing. So instead of the FAA being in the house, they've got Boeing employees doing it. So the FAA needs to get in the house.
Yeah. I was going to say, you can look at both the manufacturing piece and the final assembly piece. Both sides apparently need oversight. Do you believe that Dave Calhoun can survive this? What happens there, do you think?
Well, I think Dave Calhoun, you know, he was the product. He was on the board of directors for 10 years before he took over as CEO after they fired the other CEO. Honestly, the entire C-suite needs to go. I mean, that leadership team has failed, and they're hurting the company, and they're hurting our country and the economy and even potentially our national security. So the board of directors, you know, and here's, you know, this is kind of a crazy way of thinking about it, but they're so out of touch that I think if they remove that C-suite, it really wouldn't have an impact. The people that are building these planes are doing it with or without the assistance of the corporate leadership. So I think we could get a lot better leadership that can support these employees and, you know, definitely get back to the manufacturing quality and engineering, you know, quality that we can do.
Yeah, I hear you there. You mentioned the news business earlier, and I remember always our best newscasts were always when the news director was out of the joint. He was on vacation or something. So I can identify with that. Here's a philosophical question. Can low cost, high production, and safety coexist?
Absolutely. I mean, it's been done before, but again, the fact that you have to, again, we're not building like dishwashers here, right? We're building airplanes. They have to last 30 years. They transport people. I mean, it's really is a life and, you know, death type of thing that you need to make sure these planes can survive for 30 years under all kinds of conditions. So you first have to build the quality. You have to look at the how the airplane is designed and the quality. And if people talk about this, but talking about it doesn't make it happen. I mean, it doesn't improve quality when you're pushing airplanes out the door and that's all you care about is how many planes they're delivering.
Last 15 seconds here, optimistic or pessimistic that Boeing can deliver something substantial in this 90-day improvement program?
Pessimistic that 90 days is going to turn anything around. I think this is going to take a lot more effort. There's a lot of problems here that need to be fixed.
Good. Ed Pearson, thanks so much for coming to Northwest Now. Great conversation.
Thanks for having me.
Boeing's industrial might and community legacy is usually a source of great pride in the Pacific Northwest. The bottom line, as much as it pains me to say it, this may be a case where an unfettered free market corporate mentality is failing us. While consumers generally have the power to make choices to weed out bad products, it's not so in this industry where the decision about what plane to fly is made for us, and where defective products can kill.